The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I just finished teaching a retreat together with Ruth King, teacher from the East Coast. And the theme of the retreat were six principles that the Buddha taught that are conducive to having love, respect, concord, cohesion, and unity between people. So that's very nice. And so we went through and talked about the six principles. And today I want to kind of say a few things about the sixth principle for creating love and respect. The first are things like having loving kindness for people and being generous and sharing and living a virtuous life. But the last principle is having a view, having a perspective that is liberating. And generally we think of liberation as something we do for ourselves. We become liberated. But here it's in the context of how you create a society, a community, where there's love and respect and a unity and cohesion, which is a nice compared to how fragmented and divisive societies often are. And so this view, for this purposes of the talk, call it a perspective. The perspective that's liberating and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. And in the Buddha's teachings, the complete destruction of suffering is the kind of the purpose of it all. And it's kind of a powerful statement. It's like, wow, really? Are you serious? The complete destruction of suffering? I mean, I can imagine kind of lessening it, but complete destruction of suffering. And that's certainly the bold claim of the Buddhist tradition, kind of this possibility. So when he talks about this, and then he says, how do you know you have this perspective that leads to liberation? And this is what's interesting, is he asks a series of questions, I think with the idea that you can ask yourself these questions and see, do you fulfill these criteria for having the right perspective, the right view? The reason I like perspective is when we say right view, it lends itself for some people to think that there's a true doctrine or true perspective. You have to adopt someone else's view in order to see. But perspective is not so doctrinal. It's like just a different perspective on reality. And that perspective is liberating as opposed to overlaying a view, an opinion, or some kind of doctrine on top of it. So there's six questions you can ask about yourself to know whether you have the perspective that leads to liberation from suffering. The texts say that then it gives seven questions. And if texts say if you can answer all these seven questions, then you are what's called a stream enterer. And a stream enterer is one of the first levels of spiritual maturity. They're considered quite significant in Buddhism. And it's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit like this, that maybe you've heard that downriver is a beautiful, wonderful place, very idyllic, without any fighting. People don't fight each other down there. Seems very nice. People love and respect each other. But you know, you don't really believe it. You don't even believe there's a river. You know, you live far from the river, and you know, people say, "Don't know there's a river." You know, just if you know, 100 miles to the west or something. Ah, I don't believe in it. And in any case, it's too far away. It's up over this mountain, and it's probably not there anyway. You know, you might as well just, you know, stay here and make sharper weapons. That way, we can defend ourselves and be safe. Then someone actually, you know, makes the trek, and then they're going over the mountain, and they see far in the distance, they see the river. Oh yeah, there is a river. That's nice. So they know there's a river, but they say, it's getting night, so I might as well go back down home. So they go, they give up their journey, and you know, they remember, you know, there's all this allures, you know, there's TV shows back in the old place. So what's more important, you know, liberation or TV shows? And so, but some people are not so obsessed with the TV, so they make it over the top, and they go down, And at some point, they reach the edge of the river, and they say, oh, not only is there a river, but it's attainable. I can get to it, because I'm right next to it, so it's in here. And some people then are content. Oh, this was a great accomplishment. I did all this work. I make this great journey. It's very satisfying, and the satisfaction of having discovered and really known something for myself now that other people don't know, I'll just sit here and rest on my laurels. And anybody who comes by, I'll tell them how great the river is. But then one person decides that to get into the river, maybe in a boat. And once you get in the river, you've entered the stream, it turns out there's a very nice current that carries the boat, carries you downriver, and eventually it'll take you to this very idyllic, beautiful place where there's no fighting, no conflict, and no suffering. So the person who's a stream enterer in Buddhism is someone who's done all the work it takes, gone over the mountain, seen the river, got to the river, didn't just rest to the edge of the river, but actually got into the river, into the stream. And then it said that if you enter that stream, eventually the current will take you all the way to freedom. You have to still do your practice, but you're kind of like in the stream. So you're kind of in the current. You're in the stream. You're on the right track. You're clearly on the right track. It's not the right track over the mountain to the river, but now you're really in the flow that's going to support you in the direction of some real freedom. So these seven questions have to do with asking, do you have the perspective that places you in the river? And so it's nice that the river is not some external place, but rather has to do with the perspective that you have. And this is often said in our tradition that mindfulness practice is not about seeing something new, but seeing in a new way. So seeing with a new perspective. And then having a perspective that somehow that perspective can carry you along, opens doors, opens the current for you so you can flow and move along. In the modern world of Buddhism, like when I went to Burma, there was a tremendous emphasis on becoming a stream enterer. And many people in the West who've been influenced by some of the Buddhism of Thailand and Burma, really emphasize the importance of becoming a stream enterer. And it comes back to this ancient tradition where they talk about it. But generally, it just gives people headaches or worse. There's a lot of striving. There's a lot of comparative thinking. Who has it, who hasn't? I have to get there. I have to be there, and then I can be okay. And then I have some status in my community or, somehow. And so mostly, I prefer not to talk about this kind of stuff. I don't find it that, overall, not that useful. But one of the reasons it's not so useful, I feel, is that the way the modern Buddhist world thinks of stream entry, this very important transition where you're in the river and you're kind of in the flow, is they attribute it to attaining one particular experience, an experience kind of realization, a momentary, very dramatic experience of nibbana, of nirvana. And there is powerful experiences like this that are very meaningful. But the earliest Buddhist tradition didn't describe stream entry by a particular experience. And so when you emphasize a particular experience, you have a lot of people huffing and puffing for that experience. And they're kind of looking beyond the present moment to something they can attain, and then they're measuring themselves about whether they attain it or haven't attained it. And it just leads to a lot of spiritual suffering. Buddhism is supposed to help us be free from suffering. Some people suffer more because of Buddhism, which is unfortunate. So please keep in mind that if you're involved in Buddhism, it's supposed to help you be free of suffering, not add to your suffering. So be very careful. Buddhism can be very, very important, but don't take it too seriously. It deserves our respect, but don't take it too, don't get serious and heavy. So in the modern world, they have this definitive experience they were looking for to become a stream enterer. And I saw people in Burma who knew people who had what they thought was this definitive experience. And some people were radically changed by it for the better. And some people, it didn't help them at all. And some people were quite dismayed that it didn't seem to change, and they still had their same obsessions and concerns. But I attained what I was supposed to attain, but it didn't really make a difference. So in the earliest tradition, there isn't this definitive experience, that's the point, but rather it's a growing confidence and understanding in the perspective that's liberating. And one of the ways that becoming stream enter is defined is a person has unwavering confidence in the awakening, possibility of awakening, the existence of some kind of awakening or freedom, unwavering confidence in the Dharma, the teachings, the practice, and unwavering confidence in the Sangha, in the community. So it's more defined by confidence than it is defined by some experience that you've attained. So these seven questions you can ask about your perspective. So the first one, so it's also nice about these seven, especially these first two. The first two are kind of the most important. Is that this makes you your own teacher. It points the finger back to yourself. Understand yourself, as opposed to understanding some esoteric doctrine and, you know, study endlessly for years Buddhist studies and try to understand what the teachings really is. It's funny. Look, go back and look at yourself, and you'll find what you need here in yourself. So the first is the question: do I have any obsession that might so obsess my mind that I cannot know or see things as they are? Am I prevented from seeing clearly because I'm obsessed, preoccupied, caught up in something? And so this idea of seeing things clearly is considered very important in Buddhism. But looking at yourself and saying, am I obsessed? And in doing that, can I not see clearly what's there? It takes maybe a lot of mindfulness sometimes, a lot of self-understanding and self-monitoring to track our perspectives, our point of view, our preoccupations, our bias, our prejudice that we have, the assumptions, the interpretations we have, to recognize that in fact, yes, I am preoccupied with something that prevents me from seeing accurately what's going on. You could be in an argument with someone and you're obsessed with being right. And in being right, you can't really see clearly what's going on in the discussion and hear someone. You could be obsessed with a particular person because the person's very sexually attractive. Some of you, when you're younger, maybe you had that. Teenagers, maybe. And maybe you can remember back. And maybe your perspective on your people you're attracted to romantically, it's possible your perspective on them was a little bit skewed. It's possible. Now, of course, it wasn't skewed at the time of your interest in them. But afterwards, when you realize what you'd done and who they were, they'd go, oh. And so sometimes in the throes of romantic interest, it's hard to see. But afterwards, what have I done? We don't necessarily see always so accurately in these things. Or we might have a very strong desire to have something, some project, something we want. And we're so focused on that, we don't see the people around us. The people around us sometimes become casualties because we're so obsessed, so concerned about what we want to have. It's so important. Addictions, a lot of people are addicted to things. I'm remembering right now that I haven't thought about it for decades, but when I was about 9 or something like that, my father smoked cigarettes. And one day, late at night, he ran out of cigarettes. And he had to go to the store to buy them. And he was so dismayed that he felt compelled that late at night to go out and buy cigarettes, that he just stopped smoking. He didn't want to have his life run by that kind of strong drive. And so we have addiction for things, like cigarettes or alcohol or coffee. I mean, you should sometimes people go on retreats, they become free. And but the way that they beeline for the coffee maker in the morning, you know, yes, freedom, but only after. So you know, is there an do you have an obsession? Do you have something that you can't put down? Something that that filters or colors how you see the world around you? And I think most people do. I think we have to be honest, and track record for human beings is we tend to do that. Mindfulness practice, as we start seeing how our mind operates and be able to track much more carefully the kind of thoughts that arise, the beliefs that arise, interpretations as they arise, this gives us a much better chance to notice them as such. It's an interpretation, it's a bias. If you sit and meditate and try to stay, for example, on your breathing, try to do, you know, stay with the breath during the course of the meditation. If you can't stay there more than a few breaths before your mind wanders off into some kind of important concern, you let go, you come back, wanders off over and over again, then that qualifies as an obsession. Because obsession means you can't put it down. Obsession means that something inside of you that's not you is in control. And it'd be nice if you were in control, wouldn't it? You know. So obsession, you know, is compulsion. So another word would be compulsion. So what I like about this question, is there an obsession that keeps you from seeing things as they are, is that there's nothing about believing Buddhism, believing the Buddha. It's nothing about having some doctrine. It's starting from where you are, right here, and taking an honest look at what's going on for you. And that honest look and self-understanding is a doorway to some deeper understanding, some deeper movement towards freedom. It's always nice to hear people's rings. There's so many different kinds. I do like it. My old phone had, I was able to have a rooster crow on it, my ring. My new phone, I can't find the rooster crow, so I really like that because it would go off and people would think it was some chick in the neighborhood. But I knew it was my phone. So so there's, you know, this nice thing, this question, it starts here with us and what's going on for us, honest look at ourselves. Some people think that this is a bad news because you're looking at your foibles, you're looking at how you're obsessed. But, you know, that's how you're going to make progress. That's how you're going to make some change and move into this beautiful possibility of freedom, only by being honest about how you're not free. The Buddha then gave a number of things that people are obsessed with, just in case we needed examples. So, sensual lust. So not just sexual lust, but sensuality. Ill will, so hostility or hate, people obsessed with, resentment, sloth and torpor. I don't know, no, you probably don't even use the language sloth and torpor in your vocabulary, but to be obsessed with sleeping and being lethargic and being resistant and giving up, and restlessness and remorse, doubt, speculation about existence. You know, so philosophical speculations about the nature of life and who we are and all that. Quarreling and brawling and being deep in disputes. Some people obsessed with their conflicts that they're in. Without these obsessions, the Buddha said, the mind will be well disposed to awaken to the truth. So if you want the truth, you want to clear away the obsessions. So mindfulness practice is definitely one of those ways. To settle the mind, to learn to let go, to relax deeply, to see what's there, to have wisdom about it. So it's a very important part of the process. The second question, when I engage, develop and cultivate the view that's liberating, do I obtain internal serenity and peace? So if you have, is there another way of saying this is, the perspective with which you live your life, the perspective with which you engage in your spiritual life, does that lead to you to have internal peace, internal calm, tranquility, or not? If the perspective that you have leads to that, then you're on a good track. If it doesn't, then you're not on a good track. Now, nowhere in here does the Buddha say what the perspective is that's liberating. So some people would scratch their head. Well, he talks about this perspective, but he doesn't say what it is. But it's kind of a tricky thing. It's not something. it's more like a principle. The perspective is, what is it that leads to tranquility and peace, internal tranquility and peace? So rather than adopting something from the outside, you look at yourself and try to understand and learn from yourself, what do I do, what can I do that leads to tranquility and to peace? That questioning, that perspective that asks that question, that's the perspective. As opposed to, there's a particular teaching that's perspective, for example, the teaching of not-self. Many Buddhists kind of adopt the teaching that there's not-self, or they adopt the teaching that everything's impermanent. And they use that as an overlay perspective to see the world. Oh, that's the perspective I'm supposed to have, that everything's changing. I'm supposed to have the perspective that there's no self here. Maybe, but that's not what the Buddha says. He doesn't tell you what to do here. I understand what he's saying is, look for yourself, understand for yourself, what do you do? And how you live your life, what you do in your mind, how you relate to yourself, how you relate to the world around you. What are the consequences of that? What effect does that have on you? You have to learn how this works for yourself. You have to monitor, to track, and see what goes on. So many years ago I was watching a little bit of TV. I got, for a little while, I had a little era for a few months, I got interested in watching football. Because it was a time when the 49ers were doing well. But I gave it up because I discovered that I felt worse after watching football than I did before. And even though I kind of enjoyed the game, I just didn't like how I felt afterwards. So I think this is not worth it. So tracking, see where the consequences are, is very important. And so what are the consequences for things you do and everything? And recently I gave up coffee. Most of my adult life I didn't drink coffee, but slowly I was kind of seduced into it. First with decaf, and then and then half calf, and I said, "Oh, this is nice. This is nice." And I kind of liked it, but I finally decided that actually it's not that good for me. And when I stopped drinking coffee. Then I came, that's right, Gail, that's who you are. It's like I came back to a certain kind of, I don't know, call it, but a certain kind of clarity or subtleness that, I thought I was fine, but this is better. And sometimes now I'm a little more tired, but I prefer this old way, the old way that used to be, this new old way. So for the time being, we'll see how it lasts, but I feel very, very happy to have stopped drinking coffee. So we track ourselves. And then the answer that you're looking for, the Buddha says, in answering this question, yes, I have first-hand experience that this perspective leads to serenity and peace. So this perspective, is looking at things from the point of view, does it lead to peace and serenity? That's really means a lot. And one of the great questions is, why do you sacrifice your peace? What do you destroy your ease with? Is anything so important in your life that you can get, that you're willing to give up your inner well-being, your inner peace? And you can have, it's a great question. And my guess is you'll argue against that question. you'll come up with all kinds of good reasons why some things are really so important that you can't maintain your own inner peace because you have to worry. It's important to worry, right? And question that. Have a debate. Have an honest debate with yourself about whether it's really true that you have to give up your inner peace and well-being in order to take care of what needs to be taken care of in the world. It's possible you can take care of things in the world much better if you maintain your inner peace and serenity. The next question to ask, and this took me a while to try to get my head around it, to appreciate it. So that's kind of my interpretation, I guess. Are there people in other spiritual traditions who have the perspective I have? And you're supposed to realize no. And it's a little odd to me, how I understand it is that as we pursue or safeguard or develop this inner peace, inner well-being that's possible, we're interested in doing it as thoroughly and completely as we can. Do you know anybody anywhere else that they can do it that's better? They have a better way of doing it, or a deeper, or fuller place to do it. If they do, go there. But if you don't, then you can have this unwavering confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The thing that makes a Buddhist a stream enterer. So that's my best effort to understand this. So the next ones I'll go through a little bit quickly. Do I have the character of a person who has this right perspective? Do I have the character, personal character? And this is how you would know that you have the right, character. That if you do an offense, if you hurt someone, you would then immediately go and reveal that, tell that to someone you think is wise. It doesn't say you'll never make an offense, never cause harm, but if you do, you'll go tell someone. Isn't that nice? I think it's nice. No, you don't like it? So that willingness to be open with your life, honest about your life, to be transparent, not to hide and protect, not to feel like you can't let people know, but at least the wise people, let them know so you're accountable. The willingness, that's a sign of good character. And then he asked the question a second time, do I have the character of a person who has a right view? And here the answer is, although the person is involved in many affairs, many activities in life, the person would stay focused on maintaining the best possible virtue, the best possible quality of mind, and the best possible wisdom. In other words, you might have work, you have to do important work in the world. You might have a lot of things you have to do, but you would not give such priority to those that you would lose touch with maintaining your virtue, and this peaceful mind that you're attaining, high quality, harmonious mind. And so here we look at ourselves again. It goes back to the first question of obsession. Are you obsessed by all the things you have to do so that you lose touch with, so you don't no longer give priority to the quality of your virtue, the quality of your mind, and the quality of your wisdom? And then the next question is, do I have the strength of a person who has the right perspective? And the strength here is defined that one gives eager attention to studying the Dharma. Back then, listening to the Dharma. So by now, after 30 minutes of talk, if you're not sitting here on the edge of your seat excited and eager, either I'm not teaching very well, or you're not a street mentor. And then again he says, do I have the strength of a person who has this right perspective? And this time the answer is, yes, if one is inspired and gladdened from learning the Dharma. So I like this ending with the idea of being inspired and gladdened. that somehow that this dharma is that thing that moves us to cultivate the best possible inner quality of life. Cultivate this deep sense of being at home and being at peace with ourselves. And are you inspired by this possibility, inspired by this awakening, inspired by the teachings that move in that way? And does it make you happy? The word is glad in English. If you can answer yes for all these questions this way, then it says you're a stream enterer. And if you're not, I can't say yes for all of them, then it shows you where it's good to go study and look at and monitor yourself and so you can see where you might be interested to develop and grow in certain ways. And then finally, to repeat what I said at the beginning, that this principle of having the right perspective is also done for the purpose of creating a society where there's love, respect, concord, cohesion, and unity. Isn't that nice? So as you develop this inner freedom from obsession, this inner freedom of peace, inner harmony, well-being, that we don't just do it for ourselves, but we do it for our community as well. And it's a way of supporting and helping everyone. It's a way of being able to meet people as in friendly ways, in loving ways, in kind ways, and I think maybe very importantly, in respectful ways, so that we can all live together in a shared life, perhaps as one family of people, rather than fragmented into groups that are at odds with each other. So maybe someday you'll enter the stream and you'll be so in the flow of how important, how valuable it is to maintain a peaceful, settled heart, that that peaceful, settled heart will carry you in, down the river to a beautiful place of real freedom, the complete destruction of suffering. Great. So thank you. Finally,